Information is available at 356-3736.
In sports, the agent for Indiana Pacers guard Jamal Tinsley expects the NBA Players Association to file a grievance against the team because it refuses to play or waive him or to buy out his contract so he can sign with another team. Tinsley has not played this season and has not been allowed to practice with the team. He is still listed on the Indiana roster, but team president Larry Bird has consistently said the Pacers have no intention of bringing him back. Chicago Bulls guard Ben Gordon says his team is playing with a lot more confidence, and that shows in Chicago's recent success. The Bulls have a 3-game win streak going, and they'll try to extend that in Houston tonight. The Rockets, however, have won 5 straight against the Bulls. Number 8 Marquette looks to extend its winning streak to 12 games tonight when it visits a struggling DePaul club. The Blue Demons are 0-9 in the Big East, which is their worst start in league play since going 0-12 to open the 1995-1996 season in Conference USA. The Chicago Blackhawks are hoping for another successful visit to Edmonton. The last time the Hawks played the Oilers was December 16th, and Chicago skated away with a 9-2 win. Tonight will be game 4 in an 8-game road trip for Chicago. The Hawks are 2-1 on the trip so far. And the St. Louis Blues are on the road tonight to face a Columbus Blue Jackets team that will be trying to rebound from one of their worst losses of the season. Columbus lost 7-3 to Dallas at home on Saturday. Tonight, they'll be looking to avoid a 5th straight loss to the Blues when the teams meet at Nationwide Arena in Columbus. That's sports.
Programming on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at tnol.com.
Illinois State Senator Frank Watson of Greenville says he will resign effective February 16th. Watson served as Senate Republican leader for over 5 years, but he was forced to give up that position after suffering a stroke last fall. Watson spoke with Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford about his time in the General Assembly and his ongoing recovery.
I've made a lot of progress from October 17th. I've come a long way, but I got a long way more to go. And the rehab and the therapy and the time I've spent on this has been very, very successful, rewarding. And so I think I couldn't do the job to the level I want to do it, and it's not fair to my constituents or people that elected me from the 51st District that I wouldn't be 100%. So I think it's time for me to step aside. The time is right, and I think people need to know when to go. You know, I've seen people stay on when way past their time of productivity, and I think it's time to go for me, and you can stay too long in this business.
It sounds as though things are going well, though, since this occurred.
Yes, October 17th, I had a brainstem stroke. I was very fortunate. They said that I was taking a baby aspirin every day. My doctors said that may have saved my life. So, I've been through rehabilitation ever since then. I started it right away within 4 days, and I have made some progress. I couldn't move my hand, I couldn't move my feet, arm, leg, and now I'm walking, and I'm doing a lot of things that everybody takes for granted, but there's still some more to be done. I got balance and dexterity and that kind of thing is really limited, and I've still got some more fine motor skills that I need to improve on, and I just want to be able to spend as much time as I can to get as much recovery as possible.
Well, let me ask you, too. I know that I had read, I believe, one of the reasons you wanted to stay over the last several weeks was to make sure you were there for the impeachment proceedings. Can you touch on that as well? I mean, was that something you wanted to participate in?
Oh, I definitely wanted to participate in the impeachment trial. I was, I said all along that I wanted to see what the therapy did and how much recovery I'd gotten, and it's going to take some time, but I was in Springfield for the impeachment, and I realized that there is some limitations as to what I can do and what I can't do. So I felt like I needed to be there, know what I could do, know what I couldn't do, and then make a decision. But as far as the impeachment trial is concerned, I definitely want to be a part of that. I think it's a part, big part of history. I can't believe that we were actually there. I just thought that surely he was going to resign before we would go through all that, but that wasn't the case, and we did what we had to do, and we'll go on from there.
You look back at the time you spent as a leader, and it wasn't the time, certainly in state government, where a lot got accomplished, but for various reasons possibly, but maybe you could go into how do you view that period for Illinois government?
Well, it was a very tumultuous time. I mean, we, the Senate Republicans, really went toe-to-toe with the governor. I mean, we took him on the spending, the new programs, all the decisions to change the focus and scope of government. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take us to recover from this. But it was a very tumultuous time for us. And we, I've been proud of my caucus and the fact that we did stand up to him. We all paid some personal political sacrifices for it, and our constituency maybe too. But we were doing the right thing, and we were screaming foul long before this trial began, and we were screaming and right now about the budget and about their spending habits over the last 6 years, and I think that we're going to be vindicated when this is all over, because we've been talking about this and trying to wake up the process, wake up the majority, the Democrats, to the fact that what they were doing was not going to be healthy for the state of Illinois in the future, and we were right.
How hard is it going to be to walk away from this? You've been here since what, the late 1970s, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
how hard is that going to be?
It's very hard. I often wondered. I've asked people, you know, when you walk out of that Capitol for the last time, how do you feel? And I know it's going to be hard for me and melancholy in certain ways, because I've got such great friends and I've enjoyed working in the process so much for so long, and it's going to be difficult, but I'm ready for it, and its time has come.
When you look back on your accomplishments, what do you like to point out to people?
Well, from a legislative point of view, I talk about the school construction grant program. I was the first sponsor of that, and we've funded that periodically throughout since that became law. And I think that's really had a benefit to school children and communities and school districts throughout the state. It's been a very positive thing. I helped. I was the sponsor of the Bright Start program, the scholarship or the savings account for students going to college in College Illinois under the Illinois Student Assistance Commission. So those two things were two things that I looked to I sponsored, that I'm very proud of. Those issues have been important to me. But working with people in the district, when you can help people make a difference in their lives, it really is self-satisfying. So it's been, I have no regrets, none.
You're not going to be part of this, but going forward here, certainly a lot of challenges for state government. First of all, what do you see as the big challenges, and how do you think the state's going to respond to those?
Well, the biggest challenge is going to be the budget and finding out exactly what can be done under the revenues that we have. That's the biggest concern that we've all had over the last 6 years, was the lack of understanding these one-time revenue sources, and they go away, and all these gimmicks that the governor and others who supported the governor promulgated. It's going to be a huge problem to try to fill this hole, and I know the Republicans will be willing to be a part of trying to solve this problem, but they're going to be looking to cut back and shave some of these programs that the governor started that we maybe can't afford, and that's the fiscal restraint is going to be the issue of the future.
State Senator Frank Watson, he spoke with Illinois Public Radio's Sean Crawford. Watson has announced he will end his 30-year career as a lawmaker later this month. A successor has not been named. It's 2:49. The Firestone Tire Company announced it would close its Decatur production plant back in 2001, displacing more than 1,200 workers. It was a major blow to the community and to the lives of the displaced workers. Last week, another major employer, Caterpillar, announced it would be cutting jobs at its plants in Decatur, Aurora, and East Peoria. Robert Hieronymus Wendt, is a sociology professor at Western Illinois University. He conducted extensive research on those Firestone workers in the months following their layoffs. In an interview with Illinois Public Radio's Jenna Dooley, Hieronymus Wendt says the experience of the Decatur workers provides some insight into the current state of the job market.
When we began this study, the first thing I told the Firestone workers is, I have nothing to offer you. This study cannot help you. You are going to lose your jobs. But if you help me with this study and participate in this study, we may be able to help future displaced workers. And 5 years later, that's where we are. We're seeing massive layoffs, negative job growth, which means payroll declines, which means fewer people paying taxes. The economy's in a shamble. And these jobs are disappearing, and I think that's the message that the Firestone workers would want to share with their fellow workers across this nation. Don't hold out hope. These jobs are disappearing for the long run, and it's time to invest in yourself and retool.
What was that like when you're hearing people, and it's not, oh, you know, necessarily loss of income, I'm having to stretch my dollar further. It's, I'm having nightmares. I'm having, it's going so far beyond just a smaller paycheck.
As a social scientist, we're supposed to be pretty objective about our research, but a lot of the stories that were told were just shocking. The person who says, for example, my son joined the army because he thought we would not have money for college now. And I'm sitting there as a sociologist recognizing, the Gulf War is coming on and things like that. You just think that a lot of lives are changed beyond the workers, including several people who said, my wife now has to go to work to support the family. And while I'm, feminist in my own orientation, for a lot of these people, they're more traditional and conservative. And so there's an enormous role reversal there where the husband has been earning maybe $50,000, $60,000 a year, and now the wife is supposed to support the family and pay the mortgage. And so there are a lot of these personal stories that are never really caught in the economics research.
For workers that are being laid off in today's economy, what could the people from the Firestone experience, what advice did they have in finding another job that made them happy or a job they were willing to stay in?
If you take a job immediately after losing a good job, in many instances you could sacrifice your options. You could lose the opportunity to go to community college or one of the technical schools that are available. And so while there's this pressure to keep working and keep being a provider, oftentimes that can have a bad effect. These workers were saying, sign up, take advantage of every opportunity, go to the unemployment office, use the system to its full advantage. If you get the one thing we saw again and again was workers saying, if you get the chance for education, take advantage of it. While it may cost you a little bit in the short run, in the long run, you'll be a lot better off.
And with your research, it has a going forward message in policy implications, some suggestions for how local leaders can attack this problem from real life experience of what a major layoff can do to a community. Can you go through some of the policy implications?
Well, there were several. Some of them are more political than other, I suppose. For example, when Decatur Firestone closed down, that removed $50 million from the local economy. Clearly, that's going to have an effect on local businesses, small businesses, and what have you. In fact, I was looking at the data a few months ago, and it's only now that the monthly payrolls and wages have returned to the pre-Firestone level. So there are these economic consequences. One thing I don't think would get much ear, so to speak, in Springfield or in Washington, but I'm a firm believer that if we're giving tax cuts to major corporations at the local level, then they should have to pony up, so to speak. We'll give you tax cuts, but if you abandon our community, we may ask you to pay back some of those local tax breaks that we gave you in order to create jobs in our community. I don't see that as having much political weight, but I think it's a legitimate concern. there's a certain irony in this study. I was working with the local university and lost my job at the same time. And so a lot of this emotion work that I was studying, I subsequently went through myself. When you lose the primary job, it's scary. On the other hand, worker displacement is typically defined as job loss through no fault of your own. It's not your fault. It wasn't that the workers in Firestone's Decatur were the cause of the problem. Just like when Caterpillar lays off, it's not the workers' fault that they're losing their jobs. And so some of these displaced Firestone workers were able to put that in perspective. When it's not your fault, it's almost like the serenity prayer, right? It's out of my control. Help me take care of what I can. And so some were able to put it in perspective and focus on making the most of what they had.
Robert Hieronymus Wendt is a sociology professor at Western Illinois University. He spoke with Illinois Public Radio's Jenna Dooley. His research on the emotional impact of job losses at the Decatur Firestone plant in 2001 is now being published in several policy journals.
Earth and Sky.
Astrophysicist Marty Malinczak has discovered that our planet's upper atmosphere moves up and down. He describes it as breathing the sun's energy in and out.
Well, from a satellite's perspective, if you're up there in orbit and you're going along, the breathing looks like the energy from the sun has come in, the high-speed stream has come in, it's heated up the atmosphere, it's expanded it.
The high-speed stream coming in is what's called solar wind. It's made up of electrons and protons escaping through the sun's upper atmosphere and flying toward Earth.
Just like your house, when it gets hot, the air conditioner kicks on, brings the temperature down. When this energy from the sun comes in and these high-speed streams come in, they heat up the atmosphere.
And this is what activates the breathing. Earth's upper atmosphere expands from the heat and contracts when it's released. The fluctuation corresponds with the sun's own solar wind cycles.
Every 9 days, you all of a sudden you have more stuff you're running into. The atmosphere has gotten denser, it's expanded, and if you're a satellite at a fixed altitude, all of a sudden you're running into more matter. When you've got people in orbit, even a little tiny piece of space junk could be catastrophic if it hit the space station.
Malinczak says that's one important reason for scientists to understand this atmospheric breathing. Our thanks today to Marty Malinczak. I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
On February 9th, we hope to encourage 400 listeners to invest in WILL. Your dollars will help AM580 build a better picture of what's going on in your world and how it will affect you. Hi, I'm Station Manager Jay Pierce, asking you to call in with a pledge on February 9th, our one-day Monday fund drive.